Good morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. Last week, former Secretary of State Diana Duran shocked New Mexicans when she abruptly resigned, then pleaded guilty to embezzlement and money laundering for what the Attorney General had described as a pattern of using campaign contributions to pay off gambling debts. Duran, a former county clerk and state senator, was the state's top elections official. Who will Governor Martinez name to replace her? And how will this affect the big election coming in 2016? Remember, we're electing a new president next year. So big turnout, big year. And what does this say about the state of our campaign finance system? Many people agree it needs work. And Duran had been prepared to release some new rules that would have tightened those campaign finance laws. So what happens now? Joining us today is a great group of political observers. On the phone, we have Dan Boyd, a Capitol-based political reporter for the Albuquerque Journal, who's been covering this story closely. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
And in the studio with me is Lana Atkison, a political science professor at the University of New Mexico, who has done a lot of research on elections, campaigns, and state politics. Thanks for being here, Lana.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Tripp Jennings, a former state capitol reporter who now runs the nonprofit news site New Mexico in Depth, where I sometimes write about government and accountability. Thanks for being here, Tripp.
Great to be here.
Dan, you've been reporting on this every step of the way from the capitol there. What is going to happen to Duran now? It looks like she's going to get probation. Is that what it sounds like is going to happen?
That's what it sounds like. The judge will actually sentence her in December after this plea deal that she agreed to with the Attorney General's office on Friday. But the Attorney General's office has recommended a kind of 5-year supervised probation for her. So basically, she resigns from office. There's some conditions included in the deal that she can't have access to public funds. She has to seek treatment for some potential gambling issues stemming from this incident, and a few things like that. But it's looking like she'll avoid prison time and probably get to keep her her state pension, which is a significant development.
She's been in public office for decades. It sounds like, I mean, one would think she's probably not going to be in public office again, or not in the public eye very much. Won't that be a little weird?
Yeah, well, I mean, she's been, I believe she said, more than half of her life, a long time in the Otero County Clerk's office. She was county clerk there in the state Senate for 18 years, and then almost 5 years now as Secretary of State. I mean, she's been kind of a fixture, I guess, some more at a local level and then also at a state level. So kind of a stunning fall, and now to be kind of totally removed from the stage, so to speak.
Yeah, she's been in public office longer than my students have been alive. Tripp, someone's going to need to step in here. The Deputy Secretary of State is holding down the fort right now. What do you think is on Governor Martinez's mind as she considers who to pick to replace Duran for this last year in office?
Well, I've got to think that she's thinking, first of all, I need somebody who's trustworthy, because this is very important, somebody who understands elections. But then you've got the political calculus going on. This is an office that the Democrats controlled for decades, and then Diana Duran took over in 2010. So who can she pick who also has kind of like, you know, can be identified by the public, someone who can maybe is a good campaigner? I mean, there are a lot of factors that she's got to be thinking about.
But it has to be a woman, right?
I don't think so. But
I could not remember a Secretary of State who was a man, and I just don't know that. But I thought this morning when I was imagining in my head a female candidate, because that's all I've ever seen, right? Lana, is there something about this office that, you know, we think women should be a Secretary of State in New Mexico?
You know, that's really interesting. If I recall my history correctly, Secretary of State is one of the first offices that women actually ran for. I think it was part of the progressive good government. County clerks came from that kind of path.
Most of the county clerks are women.
Exactly. And what do? They deal with, you know, forms and marriage licenses and all of these other kinds of things. So it's sort of a good government kind of job. And so those were some of the first early jobs that women took. But there are lots of examples across states, not in New Mexico, where Secretary of States have been men. So she does not have to select a woman. But it's interesting that that's in your head.
It is. I mean, it's just the image that I see. But I would be fascinated to see some male candidates in there, too.
Lana, in New Mexico, county clerks are the ones who really run the elections, as you just said, but the Secretary of State's office oversees them, has this sort of, you know, central clearinghouse role and trains the county clerks and things like that. What will it mean to have a new Secretary of State in office for probably barely a year at this point before this really big election in 2016? I think everybody hopes that turnout is going to be really big for this election. You know, I'd love to see a lot of people involved, but it's going to be a little stressful.
Yeah, I mean, I think the office is under a great deal of stress not having any leadership, and then the crisis that's going on. You know, they were getting ready for these administrative rules, which they've had to suspend and suspend and suspend. So anybody on board is going to want to review those rules. They're going to have to get ready for election school. We've got a primary coming up. There's a lot of preparation. It's amazing the amount of preparation that goes on in an election. And although certainly the counties do most of that work, the Secretary of State is an important player in making sure things happen and getting resources in place from the state to make sure those things happen.
Dan, you know, in the last election, there was a very, very close race between Diana Duran and the Democrat Maggie Toulouse-Oliver. And, you know, Maggie Toulouse-Oliver is the Bernalillo County clerk. She's got pretty good qualifications for this job. But politically, there's no way Governor Martinez will nominate a Democrat who's been very, very active politically in the opposition party for a while. But are there other names that you have heard being floated for this job?
There's been a few names floated, and as you know, as Tripp mentioned, part of this is political calculus and part of it is running the office. You know, I think if the governor is thinking of appointing someone who would then run for election next year for Secretary of State, then, you know, that might limit some kind of caretaker types who would just maybe serve out, keep the things going through the election next year. I've heard a few names. Some of them I think are unlikely. A few county clerks could probably be on the short list.
Dan, spill the beans. Who have you heard?
I've heard Los Alamos County Clerk Sharon Stover mentioned. I haven't heard this one mentioned. One name I would keep an eye out is Vicky Perea, who's a former Secretary of State candidate who the governor appointed to the legislature several years ago. So she's appointed her to positions before, and I think she's a name to maybe keep an eye out for.
That's a good idea. You know, it's interesting that the way our elections work now and the way our political system works, you know, Martinez has got to be thinking she needs to nominate someone who's going to jump right into fundraising and jump right into running for this office. You know, almost the first day she's like, okay, now I'm the Secretary of State. Now I'm a candidate for the Secretary of State job at the same time. It's like getting the job, but not really getting the job. Tripp, you know, how much time do you expect that this candidate will have to put into this? I mean, she's going to probably, he or she, I'm so sexist. He or she will, you know, have probably the support of the Republican Party.
Yes. I mean, there is that aspect to the job that you're mentioning, fundraising. But I mean, I want to return to something that Lana said, which is incredibly important. Election school, promulgating rules. So you need someone who's going to be able to juggle all these like administrative stuff, vision, mission. All right. We need to get these, you know, think here's a project, election school. Think backwards. How do we meet the deadlines? All these county clerks are sitting out there waiting for, you know, certain rules that are defined by the Secretary of State's office, because while they run the election, the Secretary of State, because they promulgate rules, kind of like basically decide the parameters based on the law.
It's weird. You know, I think we've probably all of us sat around this table before and talked about how strange it is that our Secretary of State actually has such a big job. In this way, the elections part of it is smaller than I think it is in some other states. But being the top ethics officer in charge of a lot of ethics enforcement there, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, and also in charge of campaign finance, which was really brought to light again here. But you know, there's a massive amount of reporting that goes through that office that is really nitpicky and specific and requires, I think, a lot of people would say, probably a little more attention than it's gotten lately. So this new person is jumping into a job that's been a little bit embattled. Folks, we want to know what you think about this. Duran said recently that she didn't take or misuse any taxpayer money. And it does appear that she has a gambling problem. It looks like she'll be spared jail and only serve probation. Does that seem like a fair resolution to you? What more would you like to see happen to change things in the Secretary of State's office or in state government to prevent things like this from happening? Call us now. We're at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. Or send your question or comment in an email to callinshow@kunm.org. We're also looking at Twitter and Facebook, so you can get in touch with us there. So I want to say there has been some discussion here, group, of the Attorney General's role in this. And I think the Secretary of State felt that, you know, there might have been some political motivation here, that the Attorney General, who's a Democrat, was perhaps overzealous in pursuing this. Is there any political angle there, or can we put that to bed?
I mean, I don't think there's any political angle. This is not partisan at all. This is someone who is actually taking money that was dedicated to a campaign and using it personally.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a line that was crossed there. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that occurred to me was it's really hard. I don't know how I could have figured out that this happened, Lana. You know, the Attorney General has powers that every reporter wishes she had, right? I can't look in people's bank accounts. I can't subpoena people. I can't, you know, dig up that kind of information. Is it a flaw in our campaign finance system that this would have been really, that nobody would have ever seen this and unless someone had tipped off the Attorney General?
Oh, you mean there's no watchdog on the watchdog? Mm. Is that sort of what you mean? Yeah, there's no who's watching the watchdog. You know, we don't have any sort of process in place that sort of red flag what might happen to a candidate while they're spending or anything that might, you know, say, how do we look at these? Like, just how do we sort through and eliminate, you know, which ones are fine and which ones aren't? You know, we can't do 100% audit. You know, we need to have things that trigger audits of particular candidates.
Yeah, and you know, I think every time I use a credit union for my bank. I'm going to come back around and make this work. I use a credit union for my bank, and every time I travel, the bank thinks my card has been stolen. And I mean, like, travel a few states away, and they call me. They cut off my card, and they call me, and they say, "We noticed you just tried to buy something in Tennessee or New York, and clearly this is fraud." And I'm like, "No, clearly I'm in New York or Tennessee." You know, we have all these systems in other parts of our daily lives where computers are tracking our movements and picking up anomalies. It seems like there should be some way to pick up anomalies like this in our system, even if it's just human beings actually going through the forms and matching form A that says who gave money to this candidate with, you know, the group that says they gave the money, you know, matching these forms in a giant game of memory on a big table. Trip?
There are certain things like banks do have kind of like triggers set up for certain offices, public offices, that are certain transactions that are above a certain level are trigger something. So there are always questions as to, and I don't know if anybody's written this yet, but how was the AG's office tipped off?
Well, somebody had inside information. Let's take a call from Cal in Los Alamos. Cal, welcome to the show.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for taking the call. I guess one of the things that I'd like to see, other than better and maybe more immediate auditing requirements by an honest broker, in order to prevent this from happening again, is that the public has to be more engaged in the quality of the people we elect. There has to be I think the primary thing has to go to self-policing. It's unfortunate that we had a Secretary of State who's gotten herself behind the eight ball this way, but the candidates and the people we elect really have to look in the mirror more often.
But Cal, she was such a great candidate for this job. I mean, she was supremely qualified, and she had, I mean, everyone thought she had so much more integrity than the people who came before her. I don't know how we could pick better candidates.
Well, and that goes to the second part, which is there has to be a faster, honest broker auditing where that money is going when money is diverted.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, obviously we didn't see that coming.
No, we didn't. Thank you for bringing...
Why did it go on so long is the question. with what's wrong with the way we get feedback on these problems.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Cal. You know, there is a system, sort of, in place where these campaign finance reports are audited. A portion of them are audited. It's supposed to be about 10%, but it only happens after the election cycle is over. And, I mean, you can imagine it's a ton of work, and this is a really big burden on the Secretary of State's office, which has all these other jobs to do, but there really is not a system in place right now that could have caught this. Folks, we're going to take a really quick break here. We want to hear from you again about what you think is going on here, so call us now at 277-5866. 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. Let us know what you think. Former Secretary of State Diana Duran said she didn't take any public money and she didn't violate the integrity of the office. Do you agree? Does it matter that she only tampered with campaign contributions? Call and let us know, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Animal Humane's Doggy Dash and Dottle, Sunday, November 1st at Balloon Fiesta Park. Dasher, Dottle, and races, play in the Doggy Carnival, discover treats at Barkett Place, and more. Register at doggy-and-dottle.org.
The Osher Institute at UNM presents The Winter War in Popular Culture with Dr. John Bratzel, Friday, October 30th, 10 a.m. For details, contact Mara Lee at 505-277-6179. Osher proudly supports KUNM.
This Week in This American Life. When Jesse first started getting letters from Pamela,
everybody's looking for that perfect love and everything, and this pops up.
Dear Jesse, deep down, you know as well as I do that you could be a lot better off if you only had someone on your side. So I thought, well, could this be something different?
Different does not begin to describe what happens next.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we're talking about former Secretary of State Diana Duran, who resigned and pleaded guilty to using campaign contributions to pay gambling debts. With me on the phone is Dan Boyd, a political reporter from the Albuquerque Journal, Lana Atkinson, a political science professor here at UNM, and Trip Jennings with the nonprofit news site New Mexico In Depth. We have an email comment here from Motley, who says, Duran has the best plea deal yet. Low-level pot dealers go to jail, and Duran gets probation and to keep her state pension. Is the attorney general dropping the ball with this deal? How fair is this? Well, I don't know if people think this person with a gambling addiction who didn't steal money from the state, but I guess from her campaign, I mean, is that worth jail time, Tripp?
You know, on a very human level, this is a very sad story. I mean, so I think there's part of that. I mean, this is a person who's struggling with something, Diana Duran. At the same time, I've heard a lot of, like, I've seen on Facebook and Twitter, and I've heard people talk about how the deal is just too sweet. You know, and she's not going to spend any time within a prison cell or jail cell. I think whether the attorney general dropped the ball here, I think that's probably a matter of public debate. It really depends on is this balancing act of, you know, in some ways, you know, I mean, the AG has prosecuted a public official. That's good for him.
And her career is over.
Well, her career is over. And also she's not going to spend time in the sale. Both sides of this are getting what they need. Is the public represented? I don't know. You know, it's a good question.
We have a comment from Twitter from David who says, Duran got a slap on the wrist. She showed no remorse. She kept her holier than thou attitude and taking her pension would be fair. I've heard a lot from people, too, on Facebook and in messages about the pension thing. And, you know, we've been talking at the Capitol about taking pensions from public officials, convicted of corruption. But this case does feel different, you know, and she maintains that this is not, you know, public corruption. This is a different flavor of less spicy corruption of just her own accounts. Let's go to the phones and hear from Dwayne in Albuquerque. Welcome to the show, Dwayne. Do we have you here? Good morning.
My comment is that once again, we have too much money in the political system. If we had more public financing, this would not go on. We had two candidates here in Albuquerque who ran for city council on public financing. One of them was victorious, the other one was not. But we would hear much more of the people's voice if we could take some of this money out of politics.
Thank you for that idea, Duane. Lana, I want to ask you briefly, why do we not have public financing of all these elections?
I believe that's the First Amendment, freedom of speech. So, yeah, that's a big fight. That's pretty hard. And you know, if you end up going into that system, you can always opt out, which creates all kinds of problems for equality between candidates. It's a very difficult issue. I think it's such an important issue, but it legally, how we get through that to from A to B is a very difficult process.
I think we've seen some success in New Mexico at these very low level races, but you just cannot imagine the bigger, more contentious campaign saying, okay, it feels like they're giving up all the control in the race, because if they just worked harder, they could raise more money, and more money means they win.
You know, we had 8% turnout in that election. So, I mean, part of that has to do with competition, and, you know, you've got to mobilize voters. And that's not the job of sort of election administrators. That's the job of candidates. I think if you look at the mayoral race in Santa Fe, you had all these outside groups coming in and spending all kinds of money, right? So everybody took public campaign financing, and then these groups came in and tilted it another way.
Yeah.
So there's lots of other players. It's such a complex issue.
Even if we did do public financing, it doesn't matter, because Citizens United means that money can come through all the cracks in the boards here. Let's hear from Jackie in Nambe. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning. I think that one of the issues that's being skirted here, and that I know most people were talking about since this weekend and the announcement was made of the plea bargain, is why, if our attorney general had, I think, 65 counts against Diana Duran, many of which my understanding is was doing her term in office, why are we settling out of court for things that occurred prior to office? I understand she had a long history of service to the state of New Mexico. However, the law is the law, and if you violate the law, you must pay the consequences. We ask that of everyone else in this state, and I want to know, are we not to believe the attorney general did a good investigation? Are we to believe it was politically motivated? Or are we to believe that this settlement is politically motivated, and that if you are certain people, you can get off and you can violate the law without paying the consequences?
Jackie, thank you for bringing that up. You know, I think a lot of people looked at those 65 counts, 64 counts, and thought, whoa, that's a whole lot of stuff. But, you know, when you actually looked through them, I think, and lawyers, prosecutors often do this, they go and take their shopping cart through the code and put every single thing they can in the shopping cart to make sure they've got every tool that they can use. Dan, you know, what the deal actually was, I think, picked up the biggest parts of that, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think you just mentioned what I was going to say. I mean, I think it's not uncommon for prosecutors to charge as many charges as they can, and then in a plea deal to kind of, you know, toss a bunch of those. She did plead guilty to 6 of the charges, 2 felonies and 4 misdemeanors, which may not seem like a lot of the 65, but I think that's, you know, a lot of the negotiation, you know. And from the attorney general's standpoint, you know, she agrees to resign from office. They avoid impeachment proceedings in the legislature, which could have been costly, could have been drawn out, and kind of resolve the situation. So I can understand where some of the public frustration with the deal is, but I think there's maybe another side to it as well.
We have a Twitter comment from Katie who asks, is it typical for felons to keep their pensions? Our legislature ensured it's okay for politicians. I can't remember, Tripp, what did we recently do about this?
This was, I think, in 2012 when the legislature actually, for the first time, said we can use the law to take a public official's pension. So this was the first case where this was going to be kind of like tried, basically. So the question is whether we, you know, do this in New Mexico. This is the first time that it's been tried. Now, other states have had this kind of provision before. I'm not sure what the record is.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a kitchen table conversation about this. And my debate partner said, you know, she had this really long record of public service, and at the very end of it, she did something bad because she had a gambling addiction, and you take the pension that goes all the way back? you know, 18 years in the legislature, she qualifies for a pension for that after only a few years, you know, that is it. You could see that as being a little bit unfair. Let's go to the phones and hear from Lynn in Santa Fe. Good morning, Lynn.
Hi. My question is we have these campaign finance accounts, and she's going to pay it back, what, $13,000 back into her campaign account. This money is just sitting up there. She's never going to run again. Is this giving her power to finance somebody else's campaign or somebody else who could, you know, have the same addiction?
Thank you for that, Lynn. You know, and this is something I think a lot of people have been talking about because we've heard about Phil Griego, who also resigned from office and has been spending his campaign cash, even though he admits he's not running for office again. And people are like, wait a minute. Lana.
I don't know the rules.
I mean, anyone. I don't think it's what should the rules be, Lana?
What do you do with your old campaign funds? I don't know what the rules should be, and I don't have a good answer to this.
You know, honestly, I think that this is something that lawmakers actually should think about as they enter the session, because now we have a scenario where this question, I mean, Phil Griego has already put the question on the table. Now we've got a situation where someone's pleaded guilty to something. What do you do with this stuff? And maybe there's not I think Lana really pointed out that a lot of these questions are not simple, easy questions. They're thorny thickets of scenarios and things that you really have to be careful about.
And I think we know from observing the personality of our legislature that if someone got up and said, hey, you know, we need to change the way people can use these accounts after they're not running for office anymore because there's corruption going on here, that is not going to fly. That's going to be a really hard change to make because there's all sorts of vested interest and there's, you know, hurt feelings probably going on. We have a really interesting email comment from Barbara who says, is white collar addiction treated differently than drug addiction? An addict who breaks and enters, is that more or less of a crime than what Duran did? Whoa. Dan, you know, I think this is a head scratcher more than anything we can answer here. But, you know, what do you think of this idea that folks who have access to money in these accounts, and we've seen this happen with Jerome Block, for example, who apparently had a drug addiction and was abusing the benefits of his office at the PRC to support or mask that addiction. You know, we do treat this differently from people on the street who break into a car and steal a stereo.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I do think it's important to point out some of the distinctions. You know, Jerome Block was misusing a PRC-issued credit card, debit card and taxpayer funds where, you know, Diana Duran, these were campaign contributions that she got that she was not reporting correctly and was misusing. You know, in that regard, it wasn't that she wasn't misusing any taxpayer funds. Not saying that, you know, that in any way validates or kind of excuses her behavior, but she has been ordered as part of the plea deal to repay those donations to the donors. And we're not talking about any misuse of money from the Secretary of State's office budget.
Let's take a call now from Judy in Albuquerque. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I think this is a slightly different angle, my question. The Secretary of State's job, why shouldn't that be a civil service job instead of an elected job? Because she's overseeing partisan elections, and she's being elected, in a partisan election also.
That's a good point, Judy. And, you know, a lot of people have brought up this problem of an elected official overseeing elections in the partisan environment we are working in right now. And there are other states that do this differently and have an election commission of people who are, you know, appointed or whatever, who oversee elections. Lana, what do you think of the idea that the Secretary of State or these duties could be taken care of by someone who is just not elected?
Well, who would she be appointed by then, and who is she responsible to? So, you know, that's the fundamental question. Is she going to be responsible then to the governor, who is an appointed person and is a partisan person, or is she going to be responsible to the voters? And so, you know, she has to be responsible to somebody. I think a commission is a really not a good idea because I think no one's responsible when you have many people in a role. So we need one person be responsible so we do know who to hold accountable.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as we sort of throw fits about having elected officials do this, the thing is, the way our system works is if you don't like this, the person you elected, you unelect them, right? You vote them out of office, and that's how it's supposed to work. Let's go to the phones and talk to Jack from Los Alamos. Welcome to the show, Jack.
How do you do? I was thinking while listening to what you folks have been saying that I think there's been an undercurrent that, well, she hasn't really used public money. She hasn't embezzled that or anything like that. And I think they may be missing the opportunities for corruption. She's been involved in a lot of decisions from people that, you know, in one form or another may involve public funds. For example, do certain people get some kind of tax benefits or rebates and so forth? What I'm thinking is that we need to get an independent forensic accountant to go through her and her family's accounts for the last couple of years, look at what kind of decisions she's been involved in heavily, and determine, you know, is everything open and above board?
Well, Jack,
and because, for example, there was something I read that she had, you know, on a salary of $80,000 a year, apparently she had withdrawn like $400,000 from her accounts to do some gambling or something like that. I'm not sure that's true. That was just a little thing in one of the papers.
Well, I'm sure she won a little bit of money, didn't she?
That kind of thing makes me think that there's something else going on here.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for calling in. I've wondered that same thing because the numbers don't add up to me. But I think the Attorney General's office does that kind of investigating and looking through bank accounts, maybe not as deeply into the whole family's finances as Jack was mentioning. But that is sort of what prosecutors like the Attorney General try to go do and dig around in. You know, on the phone now, we have James Hallinan, who is the spokesman for the Attorney General's office. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, good morning, Gwen. Good morning, Tripp and Dan. I'm sorry, as I was on hold, I just read the very sad news that Officer Webster passed. So I want to first express the Attorney General's condolences to the community, to Albuquerque police, and to, of course, the officer's family. I wanted to call in. These are very emotional times. Clearly, this is a very emotional case involving the Secretary of State. I understand there are a lot of feelings around that. And so I want to first point people to Dan Boyd's Albuquerque Journal article talking about the pensions. I think that was very helpful and a very good look at the challenges that the Attorney General faced in this case that was successfully prosecuted. Former Secretary of State Diana Duran is now a felon, and she has to pay restitution. And I just want to make sure one of your callers understands that that restitution does not go back into her campaign account. That restitution goes to her victims, the people that she took that money from. So it's not going to her campaign account. It's going back to her victims or to the state treasury, depending on the situation. And then secondly, I just want to make sure that New Mexicans understand that they were misled when it comes to quote-unquote pension bill. The pension bill doesn't even say the word pension or retirement in it. So the Attorney General has been speaking with the original House sponsor, Representative Ken Martinez out of Grants, about fixing this legislation because it's important that judges and prosecutors, such as the Attorney General and our district attorneys, have the tools to take away a corrupt official's pension.
James, are you saying that the Attorney General didn't try to take away her pension because he couldn't?
So what I'm saying is the law is completely weak. There are so many problems with this law. The Attorney General first filed a notification of enhancement in case the case went to trial. So that's the first issue, is as the statute reads, it can't be used in a plea deal.
Oh, right.
The second issue that we lead into is the fact that the statute does not explain or give the authority to take away a pension. It talks about salary and fringe benefits, nothing about a pension and nothing about taking those funds going forward.
James,
so
while we have you,
a lot of fix.
While we have you on the phone, let me ask you about the question that the caller was asking a few minutes ago about forensic accounting, saying, you know, there should be a forensic accountant who goes through all of these bank accounts and looks over these transactions. Is that the kind of work that your office did in putting together this case?
You know, I cannot comment on what actually happened during the investigation, and frankly, I don't know, because that's completely walled off. What I can tell you is the Office of the Attorney General has the best and the brightest investigators, and a lot of that involves accounting and other things. We recently hired one of the best white-collar detectives in the state of New Mexico, so we do a very, very thorough job.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, James. We're going to take a quick break now. We've been talking about what happens now that Secretary of State Diana Duran has resigned and pleaded guilty to charges related to taking campaign contributions and spending them on gambling debts. What could we have done to catch this earlier or prevent it from happening? What tools could we use to more accurately punish people who break these rules? We want to hear your ideas. So call in now. The number's 277-5866. Here in Albuquerque, that's 277-5866, or toll-free 877-899-5866. Tweet at KUNM News or find us on Facebook. We'll be right back.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Next time on New Dimensions, we'll be hearing from Gene Bauer. He's the co-author of Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, doing business with peace and compassion as an outcome.
My company donates on upwards of 50% of our after-tax profits to the community. I mean, that is the direct way that we foster peace. But every call that comes in with clients and suppliers and vendors, we feel that's a reflection of our Buddha nature. That's our motto, you know, commerce with compassion.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Noland, and I'm here with Dan Boyd, a political reporter for the Albuquerque Journal, Lana Atkison, a political science professor at the University of New Mexico, and Trip Jennings with the nonprofit news site New Mexico In Depth. Trip, Diana, and we've talked about this a little bit, has defended herself in part by saying, I want it to be clear that to all New Mexicans that at no time did I ever do anything in my official capacity as Secretary of State that would jeopardize the integrity of the office. Now, obviously, if you parse that, you can tell it's a very clearly worded statement about, you know, her being in office and not a candidate, and in her official capacity, not as a candidate, and that would jeopardize the integrity of the office. You wrote a commentary this week on New Mexico In Depth, which I'll ruin the surprise. You disagree with what she said.
Yes, vehemently. I mean, because frankly, when she says the integrity of the office, I mean, it's like this very kind of legalistic kind of statement when you're not taking into account the universe of what integrity means at a time when we have voters who are just disgusted or don't trust public officials for all manner of reasons. I know a lot of public officials, and I think they're trustworthy. But when you have scandal, I've been in New Mexico for 10 years, and there have been close to 10 scandals in the time I've been here, federal prison time for many of these folks. So after you're hammered with scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal, and then you have the Secretary of State, the person who's responsible for actually keeping the integrity of the voting, what does that say about the integrity of the system if somebody who doesn't get the chance to meet public officials?
I make my students memorize the definition of integrity. I bet a lot of other professors do here. And it means doing when nobody's looking, doing the right thing when nobody is looking, right? And if that is what every person in a position of power did, then you and I wouldn't have jobs, Trip, right? We wouldn't have anything to report on if everything was just running, you know, humming along with plenty of honesty and integrity.
It is a human thing. That's a good way. You just put it into a human kind of universe.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Dave in Albuquerque says Duran must be prosecuted as an example. Dave, what kind of example do you want to set here?
I want to make sure she does some jail time, not just a slap on the hands as most of these politicians get. And the fact that she stole from her campaign funds rather than public funds doesn't really make a difference. One of your callers or someone said, oh, well, we need to take that into account. Well, that's just hogwash.
Thank you for that point, Dave. We also have Nikki in Rio Rancho. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Hey, Gwyneth, it's Vicki Harrison.
Oh, hey, Vicki Harrison. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You know, I had to call if we're going to be talking about the Secretary of State and things that we need to do differently in that office.
Yeah, so what's on your list there?
Well, on my list is this conversation everybody is having about what legislators can do with their money once they leave office.
Oh, thank you. Please answer this for us. Give us some ideas.
We know that the Campaign Reporting Act needs a lot of work, which is why we've been pushing for the disclosure bill with Senator Peter Wirth and Representative Jim Smith. We've been pushing for some better rules. But one part of the Campaign Reporting Act is pretty clear, and that is the part that tells you what you can do with your campaign money. And no, it doesn't specifically say when you leave office, this is what you can do. But if candidates and legislators read it, there's seven different things they can do with their money. And it's pretty obvious if you're no longer a legislator or a candidate, the last five are the only ones you can do. You can give it to a nonprofit. You can give it to another legislator, maybe give it to a PAC. How about return it to the people who gave it to you or give it to the general fund? So it's pretty specific, and for Phil Griego and others to act like they don't know what they can do with their money when they leave office is ridiculous.
Vicki, are you going to push in this next session to tighten those rules or elaborate on them a little bit?
If we can get a message on the call, we absolutely will. Again, the disclosure bill that we've had, which, by the way, has passed the Senate three times, the last two times unanimously, which is not an easy thing to do in this partisan era. And this is a bill that needs to be passed. We have 92% of the state, Gwyneth, who think we should have disclosure of all money in politics and perfect rules that let people know what they can and can't do.
Well, Vicki, let me ask you this. The amount of information we're disclosing now doesn't ever get looked at. So what's the point of disclosing more?
Well, the first thing we need to do is to have a better reporting system. We have been pushing for that forever because, you know, as a reporter, as well as the folks on your panel, reporters and researchers, it's a nightmare trying to get information out of that system. It is not friendly, which is why we passed a bill earlier this year with Representative Jess Steinborn to ensure that our website is downloadable, accessible, and searchable. Because we're not kidding ourselves, Gwyneth. We know that your average New Mexican is not trolling through CFIS reports. But we do know that Dan Boyd and Tripp Jennings and Gwyneth Dolan are. Well, and if you guys can get the information and put out the stories, then people have the information.
I highly recommend looking through campaign finance reports for anyone who's awake at 3 a.m. and cannot get back to sleep. It's very effective.
Can I add something to what Vicki's saying? It's also what the state collects. And what I mean by that is, in just above us in Colorado, they require, like, lobbyists to report what bills they're lobbying on, what issues they're lobbying on, what expenses their employees are. That's important because reporters like me, who came from a different state where that stuff was reported, allows us to do better analysis on who the lobbyists are, all this sort of stuff. I mean, you need stronger laws in the sense, I'm not trying to advocate, but I'm just saying it helps reporters
and, you know,
to
I
get
think
information out to the public.
If we had a lawmaker on this panel, he or she might say something like, you know what, you're making this so difficult and you're making all of us feel like criminals. And who's going to want to run for office when they know they're going to be scrutinized like this? Like,
and Gwyneth, that's a great point, because we don't want to make it hard for them. We feel like if we fix the system, it should be easier. There'd be more drop down menus. It would be, I mean, I'm a lobbyist. I have to fill out reports. Of course, I spend no money, so mine always say zero. But I'm telling you, this is my job, and I have a hard time doing it on their system. And so, I mean, Tripp is exactly right. There are other places that require more information. Currently, a legislator or a candidate fills it out and says, I spent this amount of money on this, but there's no receipt, there's no bank statements. We have no way to verify that. And the last thing I'll say is, I just want to put a shout out for those boys who are secretaries of state. My boss, Miles Rapaport at Common Cause, was actually the secretary of state in Connecticut. So there are boys doing it out there.
All right. We'll make sure that the job is kept open to everyone. Vicki, before we let you go, I just want to ask you these rules about campaign finance that look into your crystal ball. What's going to happen here?
Well, my crystal ball says that whomever gets appointed to this position, our hope would be that it would be someone who just wanted to do this for the next year. Our hope is that the governor doesn't pick someone who is planning on running, because as Tripp said earlier, all that means is somebody's going to get the job and have to start campaigning immediately. We've been pushing for better rules for several years. There was a hearing 2 years ago, and nothing happened after that hearing, after we spent a lot of time putting together some good ideas. And now we've had two hearings canceled in the last few months. The best and most important part of that rules that needs to happen is for our independent spenders. So our hope is we get somebody in there who understands elections, realizes the critical nature of these rules, and moves forward with them before the end of the year.
Vicki, thank you so much for calling in and giving us that insight. Let's go to Clifton in Albuquerque, who says Duran opened herself to blackmail. Clifton, what do you mean here?
Well, that's just short version here. I'm trying to get myself off real quick. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
So the long and short is, Tripp pointed out, there's sort of a holistic nature to integrity. You're looking at how she parsed her statement. By engaging in this behavior, she opened herself up to being forced to do things on the behest of somebody who might have information and use it to blackmail her. That was my basic comment.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I want to go back to the campaign finance reports. How hard is it for you, Dan? I know you look at these campaign finance reports. How hard would it have been for you to figure out what Duran had done, even if you had gotten a tip?
Yeah, it would have been. We scrutinize those reports every time they're filed, and it would have been. Frankly, probably would have been impossible. I mean, if a candidate is not reporting a contribution she did receive, it wouldn't show up on the online reports. We wouldn't be able to see that. We'd never know that she got that contribution. As was mentioned earlier, since we don't have the power to look into bank records or things like that, I mean, right now it's really an honor system that the candidates are reporting what they're actually getting and then what they're spending it on. And we can certainly scrutinize those reported expenditures, but we have to kind of take them at their word for that unless we have proof or a kind of a tip otherwise.
Lana, you know, is it silly to think that if we just put into place more requirements and better rules and stiffer penalties, then people will follow them? I mean, or how much, what are the limits of what we can do in terms of creating a system for this kind of thing?
Well, no, I think we can create a better system. We can create a better system that's more efficient, that's more effective, that's easier for candidates, that's easier for people who are examining the data. We can do a better job than we've been doing. Do we think if we do that, that people will comply? People will comply as much as they can and, you know, will do. I mean, obviously there's an honesty component to this.
And, you know, again, to go back and look at Duran's situation, I think all of us can look into our own lives and our family and our friends and see someone who has suffered from addiction and done things that violated the trust of those around them. So this is always going to be something that is possible.
When you strengthen kind of the system and certain things, you have like bright line tests and whatnot, you're entering the world of social psychology and how people react to this stuff. But an important component here is enforcement. Because actually people there have been studies over this. People react to the idea that if I do this, I might be punished. And, you know, if somebody's on the line, maybe I won't do it.
Do you really think someone in the throes of a gambling addiction or a drug addiction would be deterred by the possibility of this punishment?
I think when we're talking about addiction, I think that's maybe, you know, that's a little different scenario. I'm talking about the 9 scandals that have preceded the Dinah Duran thing. And some of these people have spent significant time in federal prison here in New Mexico. I mean, so.
Let's take a call now from Bob in Albuquerque, who wants to talk about campaign finance. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Gwyneth. The issue is violation of the law around campaign financing, and it seems to me that there's a parallel to this with the Davis campaign on city council here right now, because he took public financing and then turned around and started raising money independently outside that. So it seems to me that's almost the same thing as what
Bob
Duran did.
Talk to me about how you think that someone who's operating within the law, even though this system you might think is terrible, it does legally allow someone to take public financing and then be supported by outside interests. There's nothing illegal about that.
I thought it was. I thought in order to take public financing, you had to say that you weren't going to do that kind of thing. So that was my understanding of it.
No, I mean, and Lana pointed to this earlier, that the way our system works right now, Lana, explain to us how this system works when, if you take public financing, how you're allowed to use other money, or other people are allowed to use.
That's the critical point. It's not really that you're allowed. You're not allowed to coordinate your campaign with anyone else, but other independent entities, they can come in and do independent expenditures on behalf of a candidate or against a candidate. So that's very different than the candidate themselves going out there and raising money and accepting campaign contributions.
Does that make sense, Bob?
It does, but I think if you look at the tracks on the ground, it's very obvious that people don't follow that guideline and the laws and everything. So
well, that is true, isn't it? Thank you,
mm-hmm.
Bob, for calling in. Folks, we just have a couple of minutes left here. I want to know what you think might happen this year. We have a 30-day legislative session between January and February. It's supposed to be only about financial issues. I think you could make a case that some of this stuff qualifies, certainly, but the governor has to approve it if it's going to be an item of discussion in the legislature. Dan, what do you expect to see being debated in the legislature this winter that is coming out of or is related to the Duran situation?
Well, frankly, I think some of these issues are so complex and have been talked about for a number of years. I think in a 30-day session, I'd be surprised if a lot of them get approved, you know, something like an ethics commission or something like that. I think the AG's office mentioned earlier looking to strengthen that the public corruption bill. That could be one that could have a chance. The governor's office said they're at least open to the idea. I mean, I think there may be some discussion, but in a 30-day session with a lot of focus on the state budget right now, I think it's going to be a hard push.
I agree. Thank you for that prognostication, Dan. And thank you to all of our panelists for joining us. Dan Boyd, a political reporter for the Albuquerque Journal. We're going to have you back soon, Dan.
Yeah, thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you, Lana Atkison, political science professor at the University of New Mexico. You're always such a great expert for us.
Thank you.
And Tripp Jennings with the nonprofit news site New Mexico In Depth. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
There is a podcast of the KUNM call-in show. You can find it on iTunes or we will share the link once we've posted the audio online. You can also look through previous shows we've done. We did another one on this situation a few weeks ago, another one about capital outlay. I'm sure you'll want to listen to right away. You can email your comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter @KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Kaveh Movahed screens your calls. Allison Hiron helped us with production, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Gwyneth Doland.